I think we should sometimes look behind the headlines in the Bible and wonder what the little women, often unnamed, made of it all. And when I say little women, I'm not thinking of the book by Louisa May Alcott, whose women we meet in their developing teen years, because in fact little women is what teenagers were called back then, because the word teenage wasn't invented until the 1940s. Little women then had no connotations of little woman, as in her indoors. Now we know the Bible was written a long time ago, in cultures and circumstances very different to today. People say, quite rightly, that human nature has not changed, but attitudes certainly have, well, in enlightened modern civilizations, that is. And we know that many more women than were named existed among the children of Israel. And we sometimes ponder on what it must have been like, for example, to share Jacob, whether we were one of his wives, Leah, Rachel, or one of his concubines, Bilhah and Zilpah. Did you know that Leah gave birth to 6 of Jacob's 12 sons? But did you know that Leah also provided his only daughter? What was her name? Dinah. She has a chapter of Genesis dedicated to her, chapter 34. We never hear a sermon on it, unless, of course, you attended Hope Congregational Church when an interracial rape had just taken place in Oldham, because that's what Genesis 34 is all about. There are 4 women in Jesus's genealogy, according to Matthew. Now, Matthew's gospel was written to convince the Jews that Jesus was the expected Messiah. And, of course, at that time, in the Jewish culture, women didn't exist. We're lucky that there are any names in the Old Testament at all. Yet, Matthew felt obliged to give prominence to 4 women. First, Tamar, who was both daughter-in-law to Judah and the mother of his twin boys. If you ever get fed up of watching soaps on TV, I can tell you where to find the inspiration for most of their storylines. The next woman in the genealogy is Rahab, who was a prostitute. And then we hear the name Ruth. Ruth was told by Naomi to sleep at Boaz's feet, which apparently was a sexual come-on at that time. And lastly, she's not named, except as Solomon's mother, who had been Uriah's wife. But everybody hearing or reading the genealogy for the first time would have known it meant Bathsheba and would know that story. So many women are unnamed in the Bible, even in the important stories, like the Samaritan woman at the well, or the woman healed of hemorrhaging for 12 years, or little Jairus' daughter who was raised from the dead. It's curious that it was important for Mark to write the daughter was 12, but not to give us her name. The reading we had today, the woman caught in adultery, that story has caused a lot of controversy. In fact, if you look at it in the NIV, which is the church Bible, you can see it's not written in normal Times New Roman or whatever it is. It's in italic. So is it authentic? Should it be where it is? If you heard me preach last month, you'll know that as far as I'm concerned, if it's in the Bible, it's because God wants it to be there. Yet the story does provide some problems for scholars who think it was inserted later. And perhaps the reason it was inserted later is it was there in the oral tradition, but they didn't want to put it in writing in case wives began to take it too literally. One of the scholars' arguments is that the vocabulary John uses in this passage is different to the words he uses elsewhere. For example, nowhere else in John will you read the phrase, the scribes. And there are 13 other words in these short verses that are found nowhere else in John's gospel. In fact, some people insist it must have been written by Luke. But, as I said, it's in the Bible, so we'll deal with it. It's morally dangerous, because wives might think they could commit adultery and get away with it. We think it was tampered with, but it's back in the Bible, There we go. So, a few comments on it. The Jewish leaders had already disregarded the law. They were in the wrong. Beginning of the story, we don't get told that. Because they'd arrested the woman, but not the man. I've been told, I may or may not have personal experience of this, that commit adultery, you have to have two people. And the law required that both parties should be stoned. It's in both Leviticus and Deuteronomy. So the scribes and Pharisees were just using the woman as a trap for Jesus. Because if he said she should not be stoned, he would violate Moses' law. If he said stone her, they would delight in reporting Jesus to the Romans, who didn't allow the Jews to carry out their own executions. Because, of course, they were under martial law at the time. The Romans were the bosses. And here's something I bet you've all asked at some point. What was Jesus writing on the ground? Take your pick. Was it a list of sins committed by each of the Jewish leaders present? Was he writing nothing? Was it, because although this illustration doesn't show it, if she was in the middle of committing adultery, she might have been in the nuddy. Was Jesus just averting his eyes from her and looking away from her? The point of the passage is not what was being written, but the hypocrisy in judging others is forbidden. In theory, Jesus upheld the punishment of stoning for adultery. But by saying that only a sinless person could throw the first stone, he highlighted that he was the only person who ever walked this earth who was completely sinless. And when we remember that, we can see the importance of compassion and forgiveness. In a nutshell, there, but for the grace of God, go all of us. There's a wideness in God's mercy, like the wideness of the sea. There's a kindness in his justice, which is more than liberty. For the love of God is broader than the measure of our mind, and the heart of the eternal is most wonderfully kind. I like that, except for the word kind. It was obviously there to rhyme with mind, but I don't know, it just seems a bit feeble to me. So put your own fantastic word in there for what God is like. It's time for our prayers of intercession.